Hello, and welcome to Health Hacks with Dr. Laura, a mini episode of the Well Women podcast coming to you bi-weekly in order to help you hack your life. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Health Hacks with Dr. Laura. I'm your host, Dr. Laura. Today, I wanted to talk about sleep, and I wanted to talk about whether you are getting enough and the things that you need to look into if you are having trouble sleeping and the ways to kind of go about that. So let's just start with the definition of insomnia. So insomnia is defined as inadequate or poor quality sleep characterized by one or more of the following. So we have difficulty falling asleep, difficulty maintaining sleep, waking up too early, having non-refreshing sleep. So that's a criteria for insomnia. So poor quality sleep characterized by one or more of one of those things. So when I'm asking my patients and I'm evaluating their sleep, I'm not only asking how long do you sleep, because to me that doesn't really matter. What matters is how you're functioning during the day, how you're feeling during the day, and if you're having issues. If you're having 3 hours of sleep because your work schedule is crazy and you're working way too much and you get home and all you have is 3 hours, but you're falling asleep right away, you're not waking up, and you're actually waking up refreshed, then maybe you're in a period where 3 hours is working for you. Not to say that everybody needs 3 hours. Most people would feel awful on that, but it's really about how your daytime functioning is and if you're having issues with the sleep process itself. And so for looking at insomnia in terms of acute, so acute means it's happening right now, it is new. This is one night up to a few weeks. So if you have one night, let's say a week, for a couple of weeks, this is going to be acute. And chronic is at least 3 nights a week for 1 or more months. So you're having these issues a few nights a week, this has been happening for months, then this is a chronic issue and worth looking into. So I wanted to start with the importance of sleep, because I think it's really important to look at, really, when we're looking at any sort of endpoint or any sort of health marker, we want to know why. It's like, okay, I want you to sleep, but what's the outcome? Because if it's just the sleep and it doesn't really impact anything else, then what does it really matter? It doesn't. So looking at the importance of sleep, I like to look at it from an immune standpoint, because a lot of the research does look at sleep deprivation and immune health. So I looked at a couple studies. One study found that poorer sleep efficiency and shorter sleep duration in the weeks preceding exposure to a rhinovirus, so that's like the cold virus, were associated with lower resistance to illness. So these people who were sleeping less, having poorer sleep efficiency, and I'll get into kind of what that actually means, but these people during the weeks preceding exposure to the cold virus were more likely to get the cold. So it just shows that not being well rested can impact you, your ability to fight off a potential virus. Another study looked at researchers looking at identical twins. So they basically took 11 pairs of identical twins. They had different sleep patterns, and they found that the twin with shorter sleep duration had a depressed immune system compared with his or her sibling. And so identical twins are really interesting to look at when we're looking from a nature versus nurture perspective, because we're looking at two genetically identical beings and we're putting them in different environmental circumstances and we're seeing what happens. So they found that those with sleep deprivation, and sleep deprivation was the only different factor, had a depressed immune system. And so, like I mentioned, when I'm looking at patients evaluating their sleep and someone comes in and says, I'm always tired, first thing I do is evaluate their sleep. If you come in and you know you have sleep issues, I need to find out where those are. So are you waking up a few times a night? Are you having trouble falling asleep? Do you have racing thoughts? Are you waking up feeling like you cannot get out of bed? What is your energy like during the day? So making sure we look at the full spectrum of what's going on with your sleep will really help me decide on what I need to do to intervene, because I need to find if I'm helping with sleep initiation or sleep continuity. Then I usually like people to fill out a sleep log. So basically, it's asking for the days of the week we're looking at, do you take a nap? Do you have any caffeine after 6 p.m.? Do you have any alcohol after 6 p.m.? And it kind of goes down a list of questions that you fill out during the week so we can really get an idea of what your sleep looks like on an average week. And so it's kind of the same thing as if you are my patient or you've seen me before, I often give out a diet diary. The reason being, a few things. So when I'm giving a diet diary, I'm usually my intake, I'm getting a 24-hour diet recall. Most people can't remember what they did yesterday. So getting a diet diary, having someone sent home with a diet diary really gets to have people remember what they're eating, start to understand what they're eating, and maybe actually be able to take a step back and say, oh, in retrospect, I actually didn't realize I was missing lunch every other day or missing breakfast or whatever the case may be. The other reason, kind of getting off topic a little bit, is I like to be able to, if I'm going to make dietary changes and or recommendations, I like to know what people like because if I see what you typically eat, then I know what I can recommend and then you'll actually like it. I'm not going to make my recommendations off of what I like because everybody's tastes are different. So similar to doing a weekly diet diary, I like to do a sleep log to understand what your day of energy, sleep, whatever else looks like. So then I can actually get to see what the week looks like. And furthermore, if you are having problems sleeping, then likely your memory isn't functioning as well. So for me to get an accurate representation of what's going on, it's better for things to be filled out on the day to day. And now everybody has heard this myth that we need 8 hours of sleep every single night and make sure we're getting our 8 hours. And really, not everyone needs 8 hours. It can depend on different stages of life you're in. So the older you get, usually the less sleep you need. The younger you are, the more sleep you need. If you're going through changes, hormonal changes, albeit pregnancy or something like that, then you definitely need more sleep and your body will let you know that. Really, I like to know if you are waking up feeling refreshed, if your energy feels good throughout the day. And so that's really the main factor is looking at your day-to-day functioning and seeing what that looks like. So I mentioned sleep efficiency. And so basically, calculating your sleep efficiency is going to be the best way for you to be able to show how well you're sleeping, depending on, regardless of if you're sleeping 6 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours, looking at your sleep efficiency is really the key. So to do that, basically what you're going to do is you take your total sleep time, you divide that total sleep time by the total time that you're in bed. And you multiply that times 100. So, for example, you go to bed at midnight, it takes you 25 minutes to fall asleep, and you wake up 2 times for 5 minutes and 10 minutes. So, what you'll do with that information is you go to bed at midnight and you wake up at 6, let's say. That's 6 hours. So, convert that to minutes, subtract the minutes that you are not asleep for. So you're going to subtract that 25 minutes that you took to fall asleep, that 5 minutes that you woke up for, and that 10 minutes you woke up for. So that'll be the total amount. And what your goal is 85 to 90% sleep efficiency. That is the main goal, is to make sure that we are that high. And so if you're only sleeping 6 hours, but your sleep efficiency is 90, then you're set. You don't really need to sleep longer. And so looking at sleep deprivation, the physical outcome, so I told you about the immune system response and the immune system reaction to sleep deprivation. However, there are other things that have been found in the research as a result of sleep deprivation, including poorer academic outcomes, worsened insulin response, so especially in diabetics or people who are watching their blood sugar. But also insulin and blood sugar regulation is really important for hormonal balance as well. So if your sleep deprivation is worsening your insulin response, then that's not a good thing for your hormones. Poor immune response, we've already discussed. Poor bone formation. So it wasn't that bones were breaking down, but bones weren't actually being formed when we were sleep deprived. And an increase in psychotic experiences, so paranoia, hallucinations, Cognitive disorganization can be one of those. And so that's all as a result of sleep deprivation. And a lot of us like to, when we're sleep deprived, have some extra coffee. And so the research actually showed that coffee in sleep deprived individuals increased commission errors and omission errors. So basically a commission error is doing something wrong, and an omission error, is forgetting to do something. So people who were sleep deprived and they tried to overcompensate with coffee were actually shown to have more mistakes at work in both categories, which is pretty crazy because a lot of people think that they can overcompensate with just drinking more coffee and having more stimulants, and that's clearly not the case. So let's start you sleeping. And so I'm going to start with some tips in just basic ways to sleep, and then we're going to talk about other things that we should be doing. So first of all, I'm going to talk about sleep hygiene, because this is one of the biggest things when there's nothing else going on and you just cannot sleep. Proper sleep hygiene is critical. So I'm going to talk about what sleep hygiene is and what you can do to start creating your own sleep hygiene patterns today. First, I'm going to put in a word about television. I know a lot of us have TVs in the bedroom. A lot of us go to sleep to shows. I myself am guilty of doing this from time to time. The thing with television, it is a very engaging medium. It tends to keep people up. The blue light from the televisions can disrupt sleep. This is also from phones, computers, that sort of thing. So if we're working late, that blue light can inhibit our sleep, inhibit our natural melatonin production. And so a lot of people watch TV to kind of wind down. A lot of times if they come home, there's lots on their mind, they will kind of throw on the TV. And so if television is helping to stop your racing thoughts, then in my opinion, it's really important to have that evaluated. So why are you having racing thoughts? Do you have stress? Do you have anxiety? What is actually going on that the TV is being used to numb that? And then from another perspective, using the radio or a white noise machine instead can actually be really helpful in just keeping that white noise. Some people, it's too quiet and then in their house or in their home, and then every time they hear a creak or something like that, someone in the house gets up, they're up because they're a light sleeper. And again, something else to be evaluated. But in the meantime, getting a white noise machine or a radio can be less stimulating and can help you actually sleep. Now, first of all, we need to look at your sleeping environment. So number one, comfortable bedding. Obviously, if your bed's uncomfortable, you're not going to be having a good sleep. Number two, finding a comfortable temperature setting for sleeping and keeping the room well ventilated. So whether that means getting a fan, cracking a window, setting the thermometer, we want it to be a cool bedroom. We don't want you to be too hot while you're sleeping. If that means taking off layers, sleeping without clothes completely, then you need to do what makes you the most comfortable. Number three is blocking out all distracting noise and all distracting light. So if you live somewhere where it is light out all the time, getting blackout blinds, or maybe getting blackout blinds for the summertime so you can go to bed if you need to go to bed early. Reserve the bed for sleep and sex. So make sure that you aren't doing any work on your computer or anything else in your bedroom so your body knows that when it gets to your bed, it's ready for relaxation. And then taking a look at where you sleep. Some people need funky bedrooms with red walls and pink sheets and that sort of thing. But really those colors can be quite stimulating. So try wherever possible to have your room as neutral as possible and remove the clutter. A cluttered mind is a frantic mind, and a cluttered room isn't the best environment to sleep in. So take a look at that as well. Looking at your personal habits. So fixing a bedtime and an awakening time each night can help you get to sleep. Avoid napping during the day. As much as some of you might love it, actually it can be detrimental to a good night's sleep. Avoiding alcohol 4 to 6 hours before bedtime. People think that alcohol makes them sleep because it makes them pass out. But really it's a depressant. So it makes you literally pass out. And then hours later, as alcohol levels in your blood fall, it's actually a stimulant and causes you to wake up. And so you've never actually gotten into that deep sleep. Avoid caffeine 4 to 6 hours before bedtime. So this includes obviously coffees, teas, but sodas and some chocolate. Some people are really sensitive. So if you find that your late night snack is a piece of dark chocolate, that actually might be too stimulating for you to actually sleep. Avoid heavy, spicy, or sugary foods 4 to 6 hours before bedtime. Again, this can affect your ability to stay asleep because your body requires energy to digest these foods, and the energy should be better spent helping you relax and repairing your body while you sleep. Other tips, you can try a light snack before bed, something like warm milk. Foods high in the amino acid tryptophan, such as bananas, can help you sleep. Establishing a pre-sleep ritual, so whether you're having a warm bath a few minutes before bed, if you're reading, another like a essential oil spray, you could do a diffuser, you could do a rub. I really like castor oil packs. You've heard me probably talk about them more than once if you are a patient of mine or you follow my stuff. That can really help. You can put some essential oils in that as well. Getting into your favorite sleep position. So if you are laying in a certain way and you aren't comfortable within 15 minutes, change your spot. If you're not comfortable at all, change your location, how you're sleeping, your position. But if you're not falling asleep within 15 to 30 minutes, get up, get out of the room, into another room and read or just do something low key until you're sleepy. Now, I find a lot of people when they do this, they'll end up on their phone. That's not the best way to do things because we don't want the blue light, but it could be okay if you had something like a blue light filter just to make sure we're not re-stimulating the brain. And then getting up in the middle of the night, again, don't remain in the bed trying hard to sleep. If you are awake and you can't fall asleep within 15 to 20 minutes, get up, leave the room, do a quiet activity, get a light snack, maybe a banana or something like that, and then go back to sleep. So really, that's all about sleep hygiene. So those are things you can do to help yourself start sleeping. Some really simple things, training yourself to understand that the bedroom is for sleep and sex and nothing else, getting us off of our electronic devices, and making sure we address other important causes. So when I'm looking at sleep dysfunction, if you came in with your chief concern as you don't sleep, then I'm going to look at the quality of your sleep and everything else going on. But if your main concern is that you're tired and you don't sleep, then I'm looking at other things. So one big thing I look at, obviously, if you're on any medications, some medications can actually interfere with sleep quality. So I'm going to take a look at what medications you're on so we can rule that out. Other things, reasons why you're not sleeping can be pain, heartburn, period problems or hormonal issues, hot flashes. For those who are in menopause, can have night sweats and hot flashes, which can wake you up and prevent sleeping, headaches, sleep apnea, anxiety, depression, and stress. So those are things that I like to look into, and depending what we find, then we can address those specifically. Meditation is another thing I recommend because it is so helpful in terms of getting, if your problem is stress or racing thoughts or getting rid of the day or bringing yourself into a mode of relaxation, meditation can be super, super helpful. I recommend a variety of free resources. One of them includes calm.com. There's an app called Calm. There's an app called Headspace. I like doyogawithme.com as a website. And there's tons and tons and tons of other apps out there that you can find something that works best for you, whether it's a guided meditation, a body scan, whether it's just plain music, whether it's a deep breathing exercise. Find something that works for you to bring your nervous system down at the end of the day. Another thing I really love is acupuncture. I love to do acupuncture for insomnia and sleep issues, especially when it has to do with stress, anxiety, and depression. Even if it has to do with hot flashes, acupuncture is great for that as well. They did a study, 30 minutes, one time a week for 4 weeks, showed improvements with sleep. And that was just in people who had poor sleep, so nothing else was involved. So the treatment might be a little bit longer than 4 weeks if it's for something like stress or hot flashes or whatever else. Other things, herbs and supplements. Now, you can go to any health food store and get any really sleep supplement you want. You really have to be careful because anything that helps with sleep can interact with anxiety medication, depression medication, and obviously sleep medication. You need to be really, really careful with that. And you need to check with your healthcare provider. Like I always say, just because it's natural does not make it safe. Melatonin can be helpful, especially in shift workers. It can get you into a REM sleep or that deep sleep. It may cause vivid dreams though. Teas, you want to be careful drinking teas close to bed, because if one of the reasons you wake up all the time is because you have to pee, then you don't want that to be a problem. So I usually recommend chamomile or passion flower as good teas. Lemon balm is also good. Magnesium is good, especially if you have restless leg syndrome, pain in your body, or you're just looking for body relaxation, mental relaxation. Other stuff, 5-HTP, GABA, valerian root, skullcap, lavender, hops, L-theanine. I would use all those for different indications. So depending on what the root cause is, depending on what we're specifically trying to do, whether it's reduce racing thoughts, improve sleep initiation, keep sleep going throughout the night, sleep continuity. It really depends. I will be picking different things. Is there an anxiety component, a stress component, a depression component, all of the above? And then again, being mindful of interactions with medications, because a lot of these interact. So that was my rundown on sleep. You can start getting a good sleep. Being tired is not normal. So make sure that you talk to your naturopathic doctor and your medical doctor if you think sleep is an issue for you. Thanks, guys. This has been another episode of Health Hacks with Dr. Laura, a mini episode of the Well Women Podcast. Stay tuned for full episodes of the Well Women Podcast released every other Monday. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. Thanks.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.